Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Security Operations Centers, SOCs, operate throughout the government. To be effective, they need full visibility into what's going on over agency networks. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency helps federal SOCs with asset visibility, vulnerability, and enumeration data. Federal News Network's Jason Miller got more from CISA's Associate Director, Michael Duffy.
It's important for CISA as we look into FY24 and really have that strategic outlook of what the future holds. What does the cybersecurity threat landscape look like? It was important for CISA to convene all federal agencies, take an opportunity to walk through what we experienced in FY23, walk through the major incidents, the cybersecurity issues that we've been dealing with as a community, and work towards an action plan, an operational alignment plan for us to think about what comes next. What's in FY24? What would we consider to be the challenge areas, the opportunities, the ways that we can engage as a community? And I think that word, community, unification, alignment, are really important to CISA as we take meaningful steps forward. We have been pleased with the cohesion between national strategy and OMB policy. I think the suite of binding operational directives, everything from the known exploited vulnerabilities to the network management interfaces, down to the asset visibility and vulnerability enumeration, that has been a meaningful shift in the way that we look at cybersecurity defense operations across the enterprise. It's important for us as we start the new year to bring that community together to talk about what we're seeing, the challenges we have, and ultimately come away with some commitments from them, which we did, which were, let's make sure that all of us under current resource allocation can commit to things like CDM, new era of persistent access, of the way that we're leveraging the CDM dashboard to manage our enterprises, how we can adopt the SCUBA, the Secure Cloud Business Application baselines, to ensure that what we're doing in the cloud and our business applications in the cloud are being properly secured. That type of community, that type of discussion was important to have as we start the year.
I imagine the CISO sat there and said, Mike, isn't it enough what we have to do? We have the Zero Trust memo, we have the presidential cyber strategy, we have agency specific, and then CDM never ends.
Right.
But this is less about, hey, we're going to give you new things to do, and really try to focus on what are we doing today that is still important, but maybe how to prioritize them, or what? What was your goal? Because I'm sure the CISOs will tell you we don't need more to do.
I think that's right. And I would say that CISA has taken a conscious step to not add to the policy work or the new requirements. I think we're pretty satisfied with what we get from the national strategy, the cyber executive order, as I said, the suite of binding operational directives. What our focus is, and we're calling it the Federal Enterprise Operational Cyber Alignment Plan. This is the way that we are aligning the work. This is the way that we are broadcasting how we will be supporting through targeted assistance to agencies. This isn't introducing new requirements or cybersecurity measures. This is basically compiling and aligning what is already known to ensure that we're leveraging the community appropriately. And I think that is a shift that's resonated with CISOs, which is this isn't a new compliance forum. This is a way that we can basically make sense of the variety of really important steps that we're taking and just make sure that CISA can help you operationalize them and sequence them in a way that makes sense to a cybersecurity practitioner.
I'm sure they all gave you a big thank you.
That's right.
You don't need more to do. One thing that they did tell you, however, was through a survey. I know you can't maybe get into very specifics of the survey, but what were some of the trends that emerged about the survey that they told you, the CISOs across the government told you?
Right. Yes. Before we met, we had an FY24 look ahead of basically what are your top CISO priorities as you go through the year. The one thing that stuck out was they were, by and large, everything you'd expect to see from the Cybersecurity Executive Order. We know that that national strategy, this operational policy that we have, has resonated with the interagency community, and we feel like that's a really good thing. The challenge was, the second question that we asked was, what else do you need to be successful? And we saw a lot of correlation in that, what is top priority with what more do you need to be successful? Because what we heard from agencies was, these are bigger than the cybersecurity team. When we're talking about advancing hardening Active Directory or advancing CDM into the next era of cybersecurity operations. We talk about zero trust architectures. This is more than just a small team of cyber practitioners can handle on their own. This is frankly more than the headquarters CISO shop can handle on their own. This is truly something that will require a whole of government, whole of a federated agency approach to ensure that we're successful. And I think that was a meaningful dialogue to both show that we're on the same page, we have the same targets as a community, but it also requires us to be working together to share those lessons learned, best practices, and when we have an organization that might have barriers or a federated nature that requires more resources, we're able to address those one-on-one.
Was there any surprises from the survey? Did any trends emerge that you would said, oh, I didn't expect that? Or, oh, I thought we were done with that, and now agency, a lot of the sisters said, no, we need more help with that. Anything come out, stand out to you?
I think one that resonated as something that stood out of it is a top priority and we're good with what we have is the KEV catalog. So the known exploited vulnerabilities, the way that CISA is stepping into the fold saying you can prioritize your vulnerability management work by what is actually being exploited. Agencies by and large are finding success in that. I think they've appreciated that the fairly small set of KEVs versus what may have been a CVSS score of 8 that would take their resources and time. That was eye-opening to us. It meant that the Binding Operational Directive was seeing success. We've seen decreases in the number of KEVs across agency enterprises, and I think that's a really good place to be as we're talking about reducing the attack surface and moving into more strategic efforts like Zero Trust.
And I know Eric Goldstein, your colleague, just recently testified before the House Homeland Security Committee, and he actually gave some new statistics about that, among other things, about how much better agencies are at. With cybersecurity, it's always that hard thing to prove that something didn't happen, but it sounds like the CISOs are telling you the same thing, which is nice because it's one thing for CISA to say, hey, look how great we are, but when you hear it behind closed doors and surveys, it sounds like that there's some real progress going. That actually leads me to part of this unified and aligned piece. First of all, is that news? Has CISA ever tried to do this before, or is this meeting with CISOs and this idea of how can we all go together as a community? Is that relatively new for you all, or have you done that in the past?
I think the concept of alignment is an important shift in the way that we're approaching this. I think you're familiar, Jason, that we stood up the Federal Enterprise Improvement Team. This is something that we have now a dedicated workforce for the federal government in a way that we haven't before. We designed an operational cyber enterprise plan, which identified all of the areas that we think the federal government as an enterprise should be focusing on improvement actions. We had fantastic feedback from CISOs and agency teams that was everything from this is exactly what we need and we can bake it into our strategy down to you're right, CISA, these are all the right things, but how do we resource them? How do we make sure that we are taking the right prioritized action as opposed to just another long list of actions? So this year what we shifted was let's focus on the areas in need of improvement and alignment and show exactly where CISA can take steps to provide the services or assistance or support needed for those agencies. Some of them can be done within current agency funding and resources, and that's preferred. But it's a smaller set of important actions that we feel make a substantive difference in the way that we are approaching cybersecurity for the enterprise, less so on just simply what makes an agency better, but how we as 102 federal agencies can work together to advance federal network security.
You mentioned the Federal Enterprise Operational Cyber Alignment Plan. I'm sure there's some sort of acronym in there that you have. FEOCLA. But anyways, is that going to be?
We're actually calling it FOCAL.
FOCAL.
And the reason for that is we were finding that when we had this Operational Cyber Enterprise Plan, it was just so much. There was so much goodness happening in federal agencies that we wanted to document. We wanted to make sure that we're supporting agencies, but we needed focus on the things that we could truly affect in the fiscal year. And that, of course, has to be a smaller set because what we're talking about is enterprise impacting actions, not just simply best practices. These are things that we benefit as an enterprise, both upstream, what CISA can take on behalf of the enterprise, but more importantly, what all agencies can contribute to when it comes to improving this large federal civilian enterprise.
So this will be a real plan?
It will.
Or is this the first time you've done this, or have you done that in previous years?
So it's really just a modification in the way that we've put together the enterprise plan. So it's more focused, it's a shorter list of things, and it's ultimately something that will primarily be internal to government. We'll think about the ways that we can communicate this to the broader set. I happen to think that the progress that we've made across the federal government is a fantastic use case for the larger critical infrastructure community across the nation. We'll continue to think of ways that we can communicate this more broadly.
You knew my next question, whether you're going to make this public, didn't you? You're ahead of me.
Yes. I think that we intend to provide these concepts on a broadcast approach to make sure that we as the government are leading by example and providing the right level of cyber practices.
And I think one thing to, as you consider, and as I think it'd be helpful for you all to, again, put out even at a very broad level, here are some of the focus areas for 2024, so industry then can respond accordingly versus and you getting 100 business cards about AI because, hey, guess what? There's a new AI executive order and you have to use AI for cyber. So why wouldn't you? When in fact, maybe you're just not quite ready to go down that path yet. So it's good to hear that.
Great point.
One of the things you when you talk about the enterprise is you mentioned the mobile app vetting platform in the last session. There's several shared services that CISA does provide. Let's start with the mobile app vetting platform. That seems to be a key piece to helping agencies as they go down the path of the digital services memo we've heard from Claire Montorano, the federal CIO, about. It's a key piece to moving agencies toward a more mobile environment.
Yes, I think it's a great question. We're happy that we're making such good progress on mobile app vetting. It's a service that we provide to around 15 federal agencies right now, those who are actually developing mobile apps in-house. I think that's an important distinction. It's a great resource that CISA is providing to allow a federal agency to say, I've taken every step necessary to secure and configure an application that will ultimately be used by either federal government employees or the public. And I think the American people are looking at the federal government and assuming that the mobile applications that we are delivering have gone through a series of checks and that it is the highest level of security. That is where CISA steps in to ensure that that statement is accurate, that we are actually providing mobile applications that keep data secure and keep the American people secure.
If folks haven't heard about it before or are listening and going, oh, we should use that, is there a cost? Does CISA, is it a fee-for-service?
It is not. This is something that we are providing centrally to agencies right now on an as-needed basis. So agencies who are developing these mobile applications can come to us and be part of this shared service.
I think that's key because a lot of agencies may say, well, I don't have the money for that. So now you don't need money.
That's right.
That's one of several shared services CISA is providing. There's a vulnerability disclosure platform. There is the CUSMA, which is my favorite acronym in government. Do you want to maybe walk through just a couple of the other ones and if there's any progress updates you can provide?
Yeah, I think the Protective DNS service is a really good example of the way that CISA can take on a shared service on behalf of the government, fund it centrally, and provide value to all 102 federal agencies. This is something that is providing a level of security, and we've seen that I believe it's 300 million blocks of malicious network traffic. That's a big win for us. That's 300 million that would have resolved to a malicious destination. We're pleased with that. We're pleased with the onboarding status that we've seen across agencies. You mentioned the vulnerability disclosure platform. I believe that you have covered the annual report recently published by CISA. One of the stats that is compelling is over 1,000 vulnerabilities have been disclosed to a federal agency and immediately remediated. And that is an important stat where we are minimizing the attack surface. We are welcoming security researchers to provide us insights that they gain from their experience and providing us opportunities to close out these vulnerabilities.
Michael Duffy, Associate Director of the Cybersecurity Division at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. We'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll hear from Randy Resnick, Director of the Zero Trust Portfolio Management Office in the DoD's Office of the Chief Information Officer on SOC operations. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to our discussion of Federal Security Operations Centers, SOCs. I'm Tom Temin. For the impact on SOCs of a major federal cybersecurity initiative, I spoke with Randy Resnick, Director of the Zero Trust Portfolio Management Office in the DoD's Office of the Chief Information Officer. That gets to the idea, too, in Zero Trust that you are not simply thinking about human users of any network or system ultimately, but also automated users and all the things happening on microsegments and bots,
yep.
whether they're
yes.
your bots or the bad guys' bots.
Yes, yes.
And so maybe discuss the thinking there.
Beyond the user, which everybody typically says, of course, you have to identify and have an identification of a user. Zero Trust goes much further than that. You have to actually identify a device. So it's the user and the devices that need to be authorized and authenticated before you could even get onto the network. So these are much more advanced concepts than we're implementing today on the DoDIN, on the NIPR and the SIPR. So the implementation of Zero Trust is really, it's a forcing function for implementing the absolute best practices in cybersecurity that we have been talking about for 20, 30 years, that for one reason or another, we've had very hard difficulties to implement individually within the Department of Defense. So finally, there's a program that can do that. But there's a concept in Zero Trust called policy information point, a policy enforcement point. So these policies and these points of decision would look at the flow of data that's happening across the network. And if they don't like what they see, or if something violates a policy that is not allowed, it will automatically essentially stop that transmission. So a lot of what I would say is the noise that's in existing networks that are going across the DoD, they would cease to exist in a Zero Trust world in the future. So the networks will be kind of quieter. I mean, you'll have higher bandwidth, but the noise floor will be significantly cleaned up. And the traffic that's only going across the networks would be traffic that's only allowed. And any traffic that's not allowed would be blocked as quickly and as early as possible.
And it sounds like that would have a big effect on the way you approach security operations centers and network operations centers, where there is less noise and therefore
right.
less engagement of people on.
Right. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's actually a huge current subject that we are entertaining now with JFHQ DoDIN, which is attached to U.S. Cybercom. Because the question is, in a future Zero Trust infrastructure, what signals do they need to receive in order to command and control activity to stop adversary maneuvers? So in the event that an adversary is moving around, the noise on the network would be a lot lower. They would be able to see and detect needles in haystacks, visibility and analytics due to technology that has exploded just in the last 2 years, AI, for example, and LLMs. So we're entering a phase now where the planets are lining up, where I believe, and I've said this, we're going through almost a renaissance or a new phase in cybersecurity defense. Folks have been very focused on offense for quite a while, but defense has always lagged in terms of actual implementation on the ground. And now I believe I see it is we're playing significant catch up and putting down true defenses for cybersecurity via Zero Trust. But also technology is coming to bear now that didn't exist a few years ago to allow us to get past the human in the loop. And we could automate a lot of the things that have been problems in our past.
But you would probably want to have some kind of, let's call it meta noise, as you reduce the noise in the network and therefore free up operators to do other things. You would
right.
still need to know, I would think, the trends in what it is that's being blocked, because somehow those have a way
yes.
of developing into
yeah.
something that will give
so,
you trouble.
So that information gets logged, and those logs would be analyzed. So what gets blocked would be logged and analyzed and captured, but also the good traffic is also of interest because it's not only what's happening and what's flowing, but from an identity point of view, it would be nice to know what Tom looks like on a particular day so that if something unusual is happening at your desktop or your logon that is, you know, way off Tom's, let's say, biometric or your daily activity, that actually will get flagged. So Zero Trust has those subtleties too. And that is part of the implementation of Target is modeling some of these things as part of a multi-factor authentication and the continuing authentication throughout the day.
That means you need to keep up, getting back to the people aspect of this, keep up with where people, especially, you know, those that are uniformed, that are moving around a lot and may end up transferred to another base, another camp, whatever city.
Right.
That, wait a minute, he was, you know, in Fort Hood or whatever they call it now. Last week, and now he's on the West Coast or something, or she's on the West Coast.
Right. And there are unique pieces of information on our CAC card, as the example for the DOD or the military, where we can track a user, at least from one perspective, wherever they are and wherever they're signing on. If they're using that device, they are uniquely identified. And so that would be one way that we would do that.
And finally, how are you getting the continued buy-in of the many, many quasi-independent components, both within the armed services, other large DOD agencies, to listen to what's happening from the CIO's office? I guess that's an eternal question.
Yeah. So I've been very lucky in the sense that I have leadership above me that has, without question and in synchronicity, have been championing the need to move to Zero Trust. It starts from the SecDef on down, at least in the DOD, and it's repeated numerous times, all the time. It's in everything. But if you recall, there was an EO 14028, which came out from the president, which signed out the need to move to Zero Trust. So Zero Trust is much more than a DOD thing. It's an all of government, all of U.S. federal government thing. And so we are partnering purposely with the FedCiv community to make sure that they know the direction that we're going, how we define Zero Trust, what our strategies are. And they have mimicked, to the extent that they are doing so, they're mimicking our path, our definition, our way of thinking about Zero Trust. The IC community is also thinking of that. Surprising to me, the Five Eyes, NATO, and other allied partners are also looking at the Department of Defense because not only have we been really first maneuver in Zero Trust and defining all of it, but we're moving out much faster than industry. We are really lucky to have a leadership position, and everybody is adopting our work because our work is so extensive. It just saves them years of eventually getting to the same place. So it's a quick way for them to catch up and then to decide what they want to do. So getting back to DOD CIO, Honorable Sherman has been a tremendous champion of Zero Trust. Everywhere we go, we talk about in conferences, ZT. We have agencies talking about it. And so essentially, it's an absolute mandate that everybody recognizes and they don't question it. So it's like I'm using one finger to open up a 1,000-pound door. It swings open. It's really not been a challenge, which has been a huge help for the portfolio office because that's allowed us to move out extremely quickly. So you would think that we would have these challenges since the DOD is so large. That has not been the case. What has been challenging is resources and funds, but that is just an annual cycle and it's to be expected.
An annual cycle that could begin any given random month of the year, the way things operate.
Every month of the year, right. There's always a phase.
Randy Resnick, Director of the Zero Trust Portfolio Management Office in the DOD's Office of the Chief Information Officer. To hear this show again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.